I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As always, you are very welcome back to the Mind Poppers podcast. Something that has been a bit weird for me, or at least something that was making me think. I was scrolling through Facebook the other day, and I came across Fox News. And I usually don't really engage with Fox News. Very obviously, it's a very right-leaning media outlet in the States, but I do follow it because, you know, I do like to have an insight into all these political people's lives, you know. Like, I like to read the comments of Fox News because I think it gives you a real insight to these, like, diehard Republicans and what they're about and stuff, you know. But I saw an article anyway the other day as I was scrolling through the comments. And it was this article on President Trump, and he was going to be doing, like, the annual turkey pardoning, right? And it was the whole turkey pardoning thing that actually got me interested. I'm sure you've heard of it, but might really know what it is. But basically, I think, like, every Thanksgiving, so every year, the president, whoever the president happens to be in the United States, holds this ceremony called the pardoning ceremony, where two turkeys have been selected from whatever, I guess, farm. Like, oftentimes these, like, farms are, like, states away and stuff. Basically, two turkeys are selected, and then those turkeys go before the president in the White House, in the Rose Garden. Well, it's actually only one turkey that will actually be before the president. The other one, I guess, is waiting somewhere. And then the president pardons these two turkeys from execution so that these two turkeys won't be slaughtered and they'll actually go on to live out the rest of their life at, like, a nearby farm or a university or some kind of petting zoo or, I guess, whatever. But I thought that was so odd, and it actually seemed quite dystopian to me, you know, in some ways, like, very kind of, you know, purge vibes, you know, like bringing these two creatures before you and then holding a ceremony about, you know, that granting them pardon so that they do not get slaughtered. And then, like, the president, whoever the president is at the time, is always, like, making jokes about eating them and stuff. And look, I don't get it. It just seems really fucked up to me. And look, I know most people eat turkey or whatever. I'm not just saying this because I'm a vegetarian, but it just seems fucked up, like, holding this whole ceremony feels like very, like, secret order, and then, like, or human sacrifice-y, and then, like, the turkeys, like, granting pardon. I'm like, why do they do it? And I was trying to look up, like, where does this whole turkey pardoning thing come from in the States? And they're not really sure themselves. The Yanks aren't sure. From what I can gather, it actually dates back to kind of the times around Abraham Lincoln. And he actually spared a Christmas turkey. He pardoned a Christmas turkey because his son, I guess, had, like, grown some sort of relationship with it. And then, like, this tradition continued on. At least, in the very least, it was picked up again by JFK, I think, in 1963. I think he was the first person to, like, call it a turkey pardoning or whatever. And then every year since, the presidency has adopted it as, like, a pastime American tradition. And I always just thought it was just so fucked up and bizarre, like, holding the ceremony and, like, I don't know, like, acting almost godlike in a way, like you're part of the divine, you know, and grant, you know, your word will spare these two turkeys' lives. Like I said, I always thought it was very dystopian. But you know what? It's like a very weird fucking tradition, because like these two turkeys will be selected at like whatever farm, you know, they happen to be at, right? And then these two turkeys, whichever ones are selected, like they will have like training. So I guess they don't really act up on the day of the pardoning. So like they will be like, you know, like surrounded by like cameras and like flash photography, like to get these turkeys used to like photographers, you know, that they're going to encounter at the White House. And they like have people around them and have like children around them and have like loud noises and shit around them, again, just to get them used to, you know, so they're on their best behavior for Thanksgiving pardoning. So once the two turkeys anyway are selected in the end, like they'll get transported. So they'll get chauffeured like, I don't know, a couple of hundred miles, 1,000 miles to Washington, D.C., you know, where the White House is. And then they get put up in a hotel. They'll get put up in like a 5-star hotel in like a big like suite. And you know, that's where they'll spend the night before they go for a pardoning. And I'm not like making this up. They'll actually go, and people will book a room for these two turkeys, like two big double beds, big area. And it's like a whole thing that like some of the turkeys can like relax before their pardoning. then they go the following day and they do like the big ceremony in the Rose Garden or whatever. And then I guess the turkeys get pardoned and they go on to live like, I don't know, like amazing lives or whatever. And look, it feels weird to me. And again, not just because I'm a vegetarian, even though I am and I don't consume animal flesh myself. And it always just reminds me of a very interesting quote, this whole turkey pardoning thing. It was something that J.C. Rees written his book, The End of Animal Farming. He said that someday we'll look back on factory farming as one of the greatest moral mistakes in history. And I also do think that too. Think once, you know, people evolve, be it a couple of centuries or whatever, and with technology involved and all that, that I think that we probably do not, I think that we probably as people underestimate the animals' abilities to feel pain and just how intelligent and emotionally intelligent they are. They are sentient life after all. But this thing, I don't know. I know it sounds stupid, but it does sound very dystopian to me, like a bad sci-fi horror movie, you know? And it really reminds me of The Purge. And you know The Purge movie. I mean, it's a whole fucking franchise now. But basically, the premise of The Purge movie is that, like, all crime is legal for 24 hours once a year. And this is done so that people can get, like, all the crime and the violence out of their system. And then the remaining 364 days of the year, these people, I guess, you know, live as good, civilized people. It always gets me thinking, watching The Purge, I'm like, would I partake in The Purge and go out and, you know, commit violence? Or would I, you know, stay in home, you know, buckled or bunker down, you know, and just like wait for the 24 hours to be over? So I always try imagine a world where, you know, there is a purge and it's purge day has arrived. And I decide to go and purge. And, you know, I load up my shotgun and I walk out that door and I wonder what will happen. What will happen? I think something along the lines of this would happen. Oh, there's that elderly woman who asked me for her help with her bins one time and ended up making me miss the train. People who say scone instead of scone, there's an E at the end of it for a reason, dumb bitch. Oh, the drug dealer who acts like, my time doesn't matter. Smoke on this, Bob Marley. My friend Sinead, who spells nauseous, N-A-W-S-H-I-S. Read a book, idiot. Oh my God, Ed Sheeran, will you sign my bullet? Wow, I see you're wearing the new little clothing line. I guess you're like, really alternative. You know what would go well with that outfit? Oh, hey, Grandma, your signature stew again? Yum, don't mind if I do. No way, it's the Happy Pear Brothers. Listen, would you guys mind just standing back to back for a second real quick? Fake AirPods? Now 50% off? Thank you, Connor Ryan. Let me swipe up, motherfucker. That was fun. That was fun. But I do wonder what would happen if, you know, we did have like a real life purge and that shit happened. You know, we had one legal day a year where we could, you know, I guess, indulge in our animal instincts, you know. I guess there would be a lot of people, you know, that would go out and murder and rape and rob and, I mean, I don't think that I would. I definitely wouldn't partake in the murdering and the rape. But you know what I'm not opposed to is, I'm not opposed to some old looting, you know. If crime is legal one day a year, yeah, I could see myself doing a fair bit of looting, you know. But it's like, I mean, I feel like we had like almost purge day. Like, you remember like back in 2015 where the government, the Irish government, I guess, found a loophole in the law, which meant that like drugs that like ecstasy, ketamine and like benzos were like legal for like a 36 hour gap while they made like some sort of emergency drug law. Like, what the fuck was that? Looking back, that does feel like a fucking fever dream, doesn't it? Like, I remember seeing the news that day, like 5 years ago, I guess, and it was like, drugs are legal now. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, I love this country. But it did, and then remember we had that like big crane, someone drove that crane through Little. You know, like, people be doing this shit when it's not even purge day. Like, so can you imagine what people would be doing during the purge? Because you know that there are some freaks out there. Like, I don't think a very big percentage of the population is going out there murdering and raping. But you know that there are some freaks out there. There's going to be some people out there that are definitely going to engage with that. You know, I think really, for the most part, the people who have the most to fear would be the likes of like the politicians and the doll and stuff. Like, I can imagine like people looking for blood of these politicians, and I wouldn't blame them either. It's the politicians really who have the most to worry about if we ever have a purge. You know, it would really be an instance, I believe, of eat the rich. And I know that does sound all very dystopian, like something from a horrible sci-fi film, but I guess the cruel reality is, it's like purge day is every day for us, isn't it? I mean, you know, every day bombs are being dropped. We have ICE detention center, kids in cages. We have human organ harvesting in China. People bombing the Middle East. You know, how many kids dying of hunger every minute? So that is something to think about. I guess, you know, we are really living, our purge is just 365 days a year. But again, in saying that, it's not like I have never, you know, broken the law. You know, there's been some nights when I've been out on the piss, and you would think the way I'm acting like it is fucking purge night. Remember being in a hotel one night, and this hotel had something on like in its function room, I guess. It was like some sort of like beauty pageant or whatever, and I remember being just like pissed out of my mind. It was a hotel in Kerry. I remember being upstairs, and I saw they had like set aside like this big bouquet of flowers and a bottle of white wine for whoever won this beauty pageant. But I mean, it didn't take very long. I was sitting on the ground up there, sculling that bottle of wine straight from the bottle, and then like got up and like stumbled towards like the stairs to the foyer, like walking down the stairs, like, you know, bottle of wine in one hand, you know, practically shaking, and then holding the bouquet of flowers in the other hand and walking down the stairs like king fucking shit, you know. Like I had won that beauty pageant. I remember walking down the stairs like, Thank you very much. I just want world peace and blackout, you know? So look, far be it for me to judge what you guys get up to during your purge. And I remember just patrons of the hotel looking at me as I made like my grand entrance down the foyer staircase, being like, who is that fucking crackhead, you know? And at the time, I was just a party girl with a bad habit. You know, what can I say? It was during my time where I was like a big white wine drinker. Like I had, you know, started off drinking vodka. Vodka was my drink. But you know what? Like it was very hard for me in terms of amounts and consistency, you know, with vodka. More often than not, like I was puking, you know, after vodka, having terrible hangovers. So eventually I thought I'd class it up and I would start drinking white wine, and white wine became, you know, my poison, my drink. And I remember like there was a space, it must have went on for about 3 years, because, you know, with your drinks, it's very cyclical. We all have a drink of choice evolution, if you will. And, you know, I had moved on from vodka and I was starting on the white wine. And I remember for pre-drinks, like before we'd go out to the club or whatever, I would buy 2 bottles of Blossom Hill Sauvignon Blanc. And then I would fucking blanc out. Like blanc the fuck out. Like 2 bottles of white wine. I'd have my first bottle of white wine, I'd skull that. And then I'd like bring like TK lemonade, white lemonade to mix with the second bottle of wine. And I was like, I just used to be like fucking blackout before I left the house, like 2 bottles of white wine. And if you have ever gotten fucked up on white wine, like you'll know that white wine drunk is just a whole nother level. It's a whole new ball game. And 2 bottles of white wine, like the amount of fucking calories, first of all, that I just didn't even think about that were in those 2 bottles. But you know what, and the thing was, like, I'd go out and I'd get so fucked up, and then I'd go out and maybe order another 4 glasses of wine. So, I mean, at least, and then I'd move on to the spirits. So at any, like, one night, you know, going out, I could have 3 bottles of white wine. And I knew I had to stop, first of all, because I was just getting myself into all kinds of trouble. You know, the kind of white wine blackout when you wake up and it's, like, literally memory erased. Like you wake up every fucking Sunday morning like Drew Barrymore in 50 First Dates, and someone has to play a video of all the fucking shite you did the night before, and you're there just in a ball of fear, and you just want that bed to swallow you up, because anything, the darkness of the void is more enticing than having to face the shit that you've done the night before. And I knew I finally like called it a day. I was like, I had to hang up the wine glass, because what I had noticed was like anytime there was like anything like wine meme kind of thing on Facebook, back when everyone was using Facebook, like anytime there was any wine meme going around, everyone would tag me in it. It was like, oh, tag someone who would like a glass this big and like a picture of fucking Betty White drinking out of this giant fucking wine glass. And anytime something like this would come up, I'd be tagged like 4 or 5 times in this by like 4 or 5 different people. And I was like, oh my God, I was like, this actually isn't funny. I'm not clicking onto this being like, ha. I'm clicking onto this being like, oh my God, the people of this town and the people that know me, you know, they all have this common consensus that I'm a fucking wino. And I had to like sit back and ask myself, at what point of this, you know, did it turn on, you know, people thinking that I was a fucking wino? That's not something that I wanted to associate with my name, fucking wino, you know? It all started off when I started working in the hotels, in the nightclub. We had a nightclub in the hotel. I remember my first night, my first fucking night of employment, we all stayed for drinks afterwards. And I had drank so much white wine, you know, didn't pay for a penny of it, you know. I don't pay for stuff where I work, as a rule of thumb, you know. I work that into my own, like, unspoken contract. But then I was found by my bar manager passed out on the second floor of the hotel. And they didn't fire me, you know, because they knew the working conditions were tough. So they allowed people, you know, they gave them a bit of leniency or whatever. But I guess it was really that time working in the nightclubs that spurred off this whole like white wine thing for me. And it was just not a good fucking time in my life at all.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And thank God I made the natural progression from white wine onto champagne or Prosecco. But Prosecco is not a word that really appears in my everyday vernacular. You know, if it's fizzy wine, I will call it champagne because, you know, it carries a certain class, doesn't it? When someone's like, oh, what are you drinking tonight? And you're like, oh, I just got a bottle of champagne. And not only that, okay, but I was the person that would rock up with the bottle of champagne and I'd bring myself a punnet of strawberries. You know, I was going all out. If I'm going out once a week and if I'm drinking champagne, you know, then I'm going to do it right. So I'd have my champagne and I'd have my punnet of strawberries. I remember I rocked up to one of the lads' girlfriend's birthdays a couple of years back. Around at the corner anyway, they were all at the back garden and I had my big bottle of champagne and a punnet of strawberries. So the girlfriend's father came out and was like, oh, very good. He was like, how many glasses do I need? And I looked at him and he looked at me and there was an awkward silence and I was like, fucking one. You know, what does this look like? St. Vincent de Prosecco? No. You know, you'll bring me one glass, sir. And then, you know, what really bugged me when I was going through this this phase of drinking champagne, it was, you know, when you go to people's houses and I'd be like, oh, can I have a glass, please? You know, just for the champagne. And they'd come out of the kitchen with like a fucking mug, you know, like one of those fucking Irish guide dogs, you know, like €5 fucking mugs. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? There was actually, there's just nothing worse. There's nothing like the disrespect when you're drinking wine or champagne in somebody's house and you ask for a glass and they bring you like a mug or a pint glass. And as if, you know, as if I'm going to drink my wine or my champagne out of your dusty, crusty, teabag stained fucking mug. Why don't you come over here and spit in my fucking face? Because that would be less offensive than what you're doing to me right now. Some people just really, right, they don't have this host gene in them. You know, I'd be fucking mortified. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it to anyone. I wouldn't bring around a fucking mug if someone was drinking champagne. What kind of sick psychopath does that, you know? And it's like as well when you go to these people's houses, you know, and I'm like, okay, you know, can I just give me a wine glass, please, if you don't have a champagne flute. I'll have a wine glass. And they'll be like, oh, well, we actually, you know, only have the good wine glasses, you know, and my parents wouldn't, you know, they're water for a crystal. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? How much of a fucking hump do you people have to be where those, like, whatever, if they're Waterford Crystal, okay, first of all, they're Waterford Crystal, they're not Diamante, you know, so reel it in very quickly. And it's like, no, you're right, God forbid I'd smash a glass, God forbid I would drop one of those Waterford Crystal glasses that have been up in that dusty, rackety fucking cupboard 365 days a year because no one in this house drinks fucking champagne. But no, God forbid I would disturb the fucking dust on those glasses. Heaven forbid that. Don't understand people, okay, who have these fancy glasses or whatever, I never use them. And like never, I'm like, what is the point? Why are you such a miser, Ebenezer Scrooge? Give me a fucking glass. Like, what are you so afraid of? Like this, that is some hoarder shit. You know, people look who have these glasses and then just lock them away and never use them. And as well, like, I'm sorry. If you're going to be having people up to your house, you can get like a 6-pack of white wine glasses for like a fiver in Aldi and Lidl, and you could probably get them cheaper in other places. I'm just like, don't have people up to your house if you're not equipped to play host. And like, while I am a fantastic host and I do go above and beyond, I like to put on a show. Like, I remember one year I was having the lads up to my house. It was actually when I was living with my cousin Debbie, who was super cool, okay? She was a cool bitch to live with. But like, if she was away for a weekend and she'd be like, oh, are you going to have the lads up? And I'd be like, oh yeah, I think I will. You know, there was no awkwardness about it. She really, you know, like let me treat that house like it was my own home. So I told the lads and the girls, I was like, yeah, we'll come up to my place, okay, for pre-drinks. And what we're going to do, we're going to have a party. So they all arrived. As soon as they arrived, okay, I had the place decked out with like all these artificial flowers hanging from the ceiling. Okay, the place looked like the fucking Jungle Book. And then I decided to throw an impromptu roses and thorns party. Okay, and maybe this is something that you guys could adopt in your own life. But it was actually, you know, it was a really, really incredible party, if I do say so myself. And the whole concept behind a roses and thorns party, and this is actually something that I borrowed from The Real Housewives of New York. But so basically, you know, you decorate the place with like roses and artificial flowers. They're not going to break the bank. You know, you can go onto Amazon. So what you do, right, is you have like a bowl and you have these little bits of paper. And basically you tell all your guests to write down one rose. So the rose being something positive in their life, something, you know, that they've got going for them right now, and something that they're actually really, really enjoying about themselves, you know, something that brings them great joy. And you get them to, you know, fold that up and put it into the bowl. And then you also then have a thorn bowl. And in the very same way, you get everyone to write something down, but you get them to write down something that is a little less positive in their life. Something that actually may be like a source of anxiety, or just something that's really impacting them negatively, you know, their thorn. And it's all anonymous, you know, no one's signing a name. And then you take turns, you know, reading out from the bowls. And a lot of people then will own up to, okay, that was my thorn, or that was my rose. And it's actually like a real, like, I don't know, it nourishes a lot of, I guess, unity and openness and transparency between your friend group. It's actually a really cool thing to do. And it's funny. I went all out, you know, like I said, and I even paid for a geo filter on Snapchat back in the day and decked it out with roses and thorns. So anybody who was, say, like in a 5-kilometer radius would have access to this filter. And you'd people in town be like, oh my God, what is this fucking filter? Where did this fucking filter come? I was like, sorry, you got to be on the fucking guest list, bitch, you know? And it was an amazing time. So and let me tell you, right, the power of these rose parties, these roses and thorns parties. I threw one year and someone had actually used, like, soaked in this atmosphere that I created, the perfect host created, of openness and support and vulnerability, and somebody, you know, decided to come out to their friends and tell them, you know, that they were part of the LGBT family and all that, which I thought was beautiful. That is how you fucking host a party, okay? If someone does not come out at one of your fucking parties, then you're not doing it correctly. And you know what? Unfortunately, we've reached that beautiful time of the year with the age-old discourse of whether or not people should say faggot in the fairy tale of New York by the Pogues. Every single year, they just love it. The press loves to beat this story like a dead fucking horse. As soon as November comes around, like it's always the two biggest things. The two first things are the signals of the holidays are coming. Is one, Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas re-enters the charts, and two, people start the discussion about whether or not they're allowed to say faggot. You know what was interesting this year around is you've seen a lot of articles and stuff from, I think BBC Radio 1 has, you know, made a statement saying that it's going to be playing like a censored version of the song. So it would, you know, remove the word faggot from the song, which obviously is getting a lot of backlash by people. But the interesting thing this year around was we have actually seen like the actual Pogues themselves on their Twitter accounts actually coming out in defense of these people censoring the word. And you've actually seen them actively retaliating against people who are fighting for the inclusion of the word faggot in the song. So that is quite an interesting dynamic that we haven't seen before. And you know what, I get it. I get both sides of the argument in terms of this song. I mean, like, when I'm rapping a song, you know, I'm a big fan of rap. Like, I don't say the N-word, you know, when I'm rapping. I think a lot of people don't. A lot of people still do. I don't. I mean, I've even gotten to the stage where if I'm, like, at home in my room alone and I'm listening to a song, like, I still won't rap the N-word, you know? I just shut my mouth every time somebody says it. I don't know. I think for me, it's just, like, a personal sign of respect because I know what that word represents and what it has represented. So I guess I kind of approach the fairy tale of New York with that same ideology. And look, I get it. A lot of people are going to be like, you know, like snowflakes. Like, again, at the same time though, I'm like, a lot of you seem to be fighting really hard to say the word. You know, like, I look around at a lot of people. Are bursting at the seams, you know, when November and December start. Not because they're excited for Santa Claus or, you know, the Coca-Cola truck to pass through town. They're, like, just absolutely buzzing on life that they can finally scream out the word faggot and have no repercussions. Which is weird. Like, I understand the discourse. And I understand people being like, oh, just leave the word in the song. But also, like, it seems like a lot of people are fighting, like, very hard to say the word faggot, for their right to say the word faggot. Like, a lot of people are like, Michael Collins did not die so that we could not say the word faggot. You know? Like, I don't understand why it's such a big deal. And I understand, like, this fight comes up every year again and again. I'm like, why is your opportunity to say the word faggot out gleefully, you know, why is that the hill that you want to die on? And look, I can understand it's a song from another time and it's a song that's close to people's hearts because it is like a real, I don't know, signifier of the Irish Christmas, you know? So I do get that, you know, but at the same time, like, and you can call snowflake all you want, but, you know, obviously for a lot of people, you know, people aren't getting offended because, you know, they're bored and they want to be offended. You know, I feel like for a lot of people, that word, you know, is a real trigger for them. Do you know, a lot of people, you know, who would have grown up, you know, younger in school and like would have been like mercilessly bullied and like, you know, having the word faggot used against them, you know, especially if they're part of the LGBT community. And then, like, to have to go out and be in pubs and be in clubs, like, during the holidays and, like, you know, being in that atmosphere where people are, like, you know, singing the fairy tale in New York and, like, seeing everybody, like, just, like, scream out with glee the word faggot and, like, you have these LGBT people, like, who are seeing their friends, like, shouting out the word faggot and shouting, and family and friends are saying, and, like, everybody around them. I can understand like how that is triggering for a lot of people, and because people don't just like say it like you know, like, oh, you cheap, lousy faggot. As in, like, people gear up to the song. They're like, are you ready, lads? Are you ready, lads? It's coming up now in the next verse. It's coming up. Yeah, cheap, lousy faggot. Way, way, I said way. Do you know, people love it. And I think it's at which the tenacity that they say it is very triggering to some people. So, I mean, it is something to think about, you know. People aren't being offended for the sake of being offended. People are being offended because it truly hurts them inside. It makes them feel bad. So I guess it's up, you know, to you and to all of us, really, if that is something worth continuing. Do you know? It's definitely not the hill that I want to die on. Although I know there will be a lot of people sad this Christmas if they're not allowed say the word faggot, you know. It's tradition. A lot of people will say, like, putting the baby Jesus in the crib on Christmas Eve, you know, leaving cookies out for Santa, you know, leaving some chopped up carrots out for the reindeers, you know, moving Buddy the Elf around, saying the word faggot aloud. So it is discourse, and I am sick of it. It's so annoying. I wish the conversation would end as I talk about it. But you know who has a big part to play in all of this discourse is the likes of these kind of inter-county radio stations. So not so much like the giants like Today FM and News Talk and those likes. But you have like the likes of, say, in Cork, we have like 96 FM and Red FM. And for the last couple of years, radio stations like this, they'll post deliberately these kind of articles that they know will drive up so much division and discord and hate speech. Like, for example, around Christmas, and I guarantee you we're going to see it again. I remember last Christmas, one of these radio stations had something up, like they shared an article and it was like, oh, you know, people outraged that Santa Claus camp or Santa Claus, you know, isn't a woman, or Santa Claus, you know, that we don't have a transgender Santa Claus working at the mall and this kind of shit. Let me tell you this, okay? Nobody is fucking outraged at that. Nobody is outraged at that. Don't buy into that kind of clickbait. You probably have one sad sack of shit who said something along those lines. Nobody, I guarantee you, no one in the LGBT community gives a flying fuck if Santa is transgender. You know, no one is trying to rewrite Santa's gender identity. So don't buy into things like that. And I think it's so fucking evil of these radio stations, you know. And then of course, like, people just eat each other alive in the comments, you know, and it's just full of this like transphobic rhetoric. And the radio stations are delighted because they, you know, will pull in traffic from this, you know. You know, like, oh, we have Neil Prendeville today who's talking to, you know, Cynthia, who is going mad that Santa Claus doesn't have a pussy in 2020. No, nobody gives a fuck. Nobody gives a fuck what Santa's packing, you know, as long as he's still coming around with that big fat bag every year. No one gives a fuck what Santa's packing. So don't let yourself get kind of caught into that kind of discourse as well, because there is a lot of people, a lot of peddlers of this kind of shit that you will see. And I think, to be honest, it's actually quite evil. Now, I digress with all this talk of parties and getting wine blackout drunk and all that. I mean, we have to also look at, there mightn't happen for a long time, unfortunately. You know, we're still in fucking lockdown, as with, you know, practically the rest of the world. But, you know, there is some things that I would be happily seeing dying out in after this, you know, pandemic is over, or at least, you know, further in the future. And I think something, you know, interestingly enough, that is going to die out is going to be the handshake. Okay. And I'm not mad about that. And you know what, like, the handshake obviously for us is a form of greeting, but there is amazing diversity of like greeting customs around the world. Like in Tibet, like sticking out your tongue can be a way of welcoming people. In like New Zealand, the Maori greet each other by touching noses, you know, like the Eskimos. Ethiopian men touch shoulders, and in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, like male friends will touch foreheads. In many Asian countries, like we, as we know, people will do some sort of bow or like a curtsy, if you will. And obviously in like European countries, as well as some of the Arab countries, we have like hugs and kisses and cheeks are on the norm. But obviously, I guess one of the most universal things seems to have become the handshake. I'm like, where did these customs evolve from? You know, like, who was the first person to shake somebody's hand and be like, okay, we're going to make this a worldwide custom of greeting? You know, interestingly enough. So I was looking into it. Apparently there's some stuff that's saying that like the history of the handshake dates back to the 5th century BC in Greece. And it was actually like done as a symbol of peace, showing that neither person was carrying a weapon. And then moving on, like during the Roman era, the handshake was like actually more of an arm grab. You know, the way you see those two, or like the gladiators would like grab each other's arms. And like that involved like grabbing each other's forearms. And it was actually to check that neither man had a knife hidden up his sleeve. And then some say that like the shaking gesture of the handshake actually started in medieval Europe, that like knights would shake the hand of others in an attempt to shake loose any hidden weapons. So I guess it has become more of I guess it has evolved from more of like a defensive tactic, you know, and then eventually evolved into a greeting, which is actually quite fascinating. But you know that the handshake has been dying out for quite some time. It's, you know, like we're a fist bumping people now, aren't we? And I'm not mad about that. I, for one, will be happy if the coronavirus kills one thing, puts an end to one thing, let it be the handshake. There's just nothing worse. Like for me, handshakes are always so awkward. Like for instance, the last time, right, I went into a job interview and you have to shake people's hands, you're expected to, which I'm just not about, you know, don't touch me unless, you know, I put myself forward. It was so awkward. I remember the last time I was going and for this work interview, right? And I was shaking this person's hand, but like whatever way my hand came up, it came up really weird. So they like grabbed it, but they like grabbed my fingers. So for example, if you watch The Crown, it was like, you know, the way when like the Prime Minister or anybody's talking to the Queen, like they like hold their hand like that in that very delicate fashion of like, and like kiss the top of the hand, you know, that kind of like, oh, chante, you know, motherfucker, kind of way. And I just remember being so fucking mortified in that interview that like, as in like how fucking delicate, you know, how much of a fucking pussy must these guys think that I am, that I'm putting out the hand like, oh, chante, which I would never. You know, I just don't have good experiences with the handshake. I remember when I moved to Dublin a couple of years back for the first time, and I had no contacts or anything, but eventually someone set me up with this drug dealer, and I was going meeting him for the first time, and he opened the door and he was this like big, tall, handsome black dude, and he was like, oh, you're Adam, right? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And we walked up, whatever, and I saw that he was putting his hand out, and I was like, ugh, no, I was like, not the dreaded handshake, I have bad experience with this. So I went anyway to shake his hand, but as it turns out, right, it was like photo finish, if you could like put it in slow motion. He actually went, right, to give me a fist bump, but I didn't know that. I wasn't anticipating a fist bump, so I put my hand out as to shake his hand. So what actually happened was he had his fist out, and I like grabbed his fist with my open hand, then like shook his hand up and down. I was like, ah, ah, I was like, let the ground fucking swallow me up. Oh my god, I was like, this guy must have thought I was such a fucking pussy, like such a nerd. I just wasn't anticipating the fist bump. He caught me off guard, you know. But that guy turned out to be really cool. And never brought it up. So I really, really appreciate that. And there's been plenty of times as well. I remember when I was in college in Cork, and like we were working in like the student magazine, which I loved. I remember one of the girls there, one of the editors or whatever, she was like introduced, because we were all very close knit, you know, in that magazine in the headquarters. I remember this girl was introducing us to her boyfriend for the first time. And I don't know, was I like drunk or high or whatever, but I was kind of like having this anxiety already. I was like turned to the person next to me. It's like, because I was the only guy there. It was all the girls, and there was no other guys in the office at the time. And I was like, will I shake his hand? Like, do I shake this motherfucker's hand or what? Because you could tell the way he was dressed. He was like wearing a coat, like a trench coat. Like he looked like the motherfucker that would shake a hand when he walked into a room. So I was like, oh my God, what do I do? So I just walked up to him and I went to shake his hand, but he was walking like towards me just to say hello, but he'd gotten too close so that we couldn't shake hands. And before I knew it, it was too late. He actually wasn't going for a shaking the hand. He was just coming over to say hello, but it was too late. My hand had already gone down and brushed off his crotch because he'd gotten so close and he wasn't anticipating the handshake. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, my hand just, he was like, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's like, no, no, no. But my hand just like, you know, rubbed up against your dick. I was like, I'm sorry. That's like literally not what I was trying to do. I thought, you know, you might have been one of those handshaking motherfuckers and I was trying to, you know, do the right thing or whatever. You know, I swear I wasn't really, I swear. I wasn't trying to grab your fucking coxer. But it turned out he was cool as well. So what I say is, you know, rest in power to the handshake. Something that, and I, the reason I don't think that it's coming back is because people have been, you know, so scared or whatever with these, with the germs and the transmission of germs, whatever, through, you know, contact with hands. I really think that this is going to be the decline of the handshake. I mean, look, our, the younger generation, we're more huggers. You know, we are. We're more emotionally available than our predecessors. So I say bon voyage to the handshake. Toodaloo, motherfucker. We don't need it anymore. And with that farewell to the iconic handshake, I bid you adieu. If you haven't gotten the chance yet, we would appreciate it if you rated the podcast and left a review down below. It means a lot. In the meantime, stay woke.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.